Hey there, future Florence Nightingales. I don't know about you, but when I was in nursing school, respiratory medications, it felt like a whole new language. So much to learn. But don't worry, in this deep dive, we're going to break it all down. We'll help you master the most important stuff about asthma meds. Think of this as like your cheat sheet, for those respiratory exams. And more importantly, to help you give top-notch care to your patients.
Absolutely. We're going to zero in on what you really need to know.
Okay, so let's look at our toolbox for managing asthma. Pharmacologically speaking, we've got bronchodilators, those rescue inhalers like albuterol. Then we've got anti-inflammatories like inhaled corticosteroids, which work a bit differently. We've also got leukotriene modifiers, remember that name, montelukast, plus mast cell stabilizers, xanthines, and even these newer monoclonal antibodies.
It's quite the arsenal.
I know, right? It's amazing how many different ways we could approach asthma treatment these days. But before we get lost in all of the drug names, let's make sure we all understand like what asthma is and how it affects our patients.
That's key. You got to imagine your patient's airways, they're constantly inflamed and irritated, and that inflammation, it causes the airways to swell and narrow, so it makes it tough to breathe. Then you've got bronchospasm, where the muscles around the airways, they tighten up even more, which restricts airflow even more, and to make matters worse, the airways become hyper-responsive, so they overreact to all sorts of triggers.
Okay, so inflammation, bronchospasm, and hyper-responsiveness. Got
Yep.
it. But what kinds of things trigger these reactions in people with asthma?
Well, it really varies from person to person, but some common culprits are allergens like dust mites, pollen, pet dander, and mold, and then there are irritants like smoke, strong perfumes, or even cold air. Those can be triggers too. Even exercise can trigger asthma symptoms in some people.
Wow, so many potential triggers. And I remember from pharmacology, certain medications like NSAIDs, those can actually make asthma symptoms worse.
Right. Absolutely. NSAIDs like aspirin and ibuprofen, they can be a real problem for some asthmatics. They can even trigger a severe reaction called aspirin exacerbated respiratory disease. And we can't forget about sulfites. Those are preservatives. You find them in some foods and drinks. And for some folks, sulfites can cause really serious asthma attacks, even life-threatening ones.
That's a good point. As nurses, it's important to be aware of all these potential triggers and exacerbating factors. When you're assessing and treating a patient with asthma, but how do we know how severe their asthma is in the first place?
That's where peak expiratory flow rate comes in handy,
Hmm.
or PEFR for short. Think of it like a speedometer for your patient's lungs. It measures how well air is moving out of the lungs, which gives us a good indication of their airway function.
Okay, so PEFR, it
Yeah.
tells us how well the lungs are working. What are the normal ranges? And what do they mean clinically?
Well, a PEFR of 80% or more of their personal best, that's generally a good sign. It means their airways are relatively open and air is flowing freely. But if it drops to between 50 and 80%, that's a moderate reduction. It's a signal that their asthma isn't well controlled, and they might need some adjustments to their treatment plan. And if the PEFR falls below 50% of their best, red alert. It means a severe airflow obstruction, and that requires immediate intervention.
Got it. PEFR, the asthma speedometer. Always got to pay attention to those numbers. Okay, so now that we've got a handle on the basics of asthma, let's dive into the medications, starting with the ones you grab in an emergency, the bronchodilators. What makes these drugs so crucial in acute situations?
Bronchodilators, they're our first line of defense. When someone's having an asthma attack, they work quickly to relax the muscles around the airways, which allows those airways to open up and makes it easier for the person to breathe.
So they're like the paramedics of the respiratory world, rushing in to provide immediate relief.
That's a great way to put it. And the most iconic bronchodilator, the one you'll encounter most often, is albuterol. It's a short-acting beta-2 agonist, or SABA for short, and it's the classic rescue inhaler.
Albuterol, every nursing student's best friend.
Yeah.
But how does it actually work, at the cellular level? How does it relax those tight muscles around the airways?
Okay, so imagine tiny doorways on the surface of the smooth muscle cells that line the airways. Those doorways are called beta-2 receptors. When albuterol binds to those receptors, it triggers this cascade of events inside the cell. That ultimately leads to muscle relaxation and bronchodilation. It's like telling those muscles to chill out and let the air flow through.
So albuterol is like a key that unlocks those beta-2 receptor doors, letting in the good stuff that relaxes the airways.
That's a fantastic analogy.
Speaking of keys and doors, what about levobuterol? It's another SABA, right? How does it compare to albuterol?
So, levobuterol, think of it as albuterol's more selective cousin. It's also a SABA, but it's designed to target those beta-2 receptors. more precisely, which can mean fewer side effects, especially for patients with heart conditions.
Interesting. So it's like a high-tech key that only fits those specific beta-2 receptor doors, minimizing the chances of accidentally unlocking something else.
Exactly. Now, while SABAs are fantastic for quick relief, we also have long-acting beta-2 agonists, or LAVAs, like salmeterol and formoterol. They provide longer-term bronchodilation, which can be helpful for controlling symptoms over time.
So LABAs are like the maintenance crew, keeping those airways open for the long haul.
Precisely. But here's a crucial point. Every nursing student needs to burn this into their memory. LABAs should never be used alone for asthma. They must always be paired with an inhaled corticosteroid.
Whoa, why is that? Sounds serious.
It is. Research has shown using LABAs alone can actually increase the risk of severe asthma exacerbations, sometimes even fatal ones. It's like driving a car with a powerful engine but no brakes. You might be moving fast, but it's incredibly dangerous.
Okay, that's a powerful image. So LABAs plus ICS, the dynamic duo of long-term asthma control. Got it. What about anticholinergics like ipratropium and tiotropium? I remember those names from pharmacology. But how do they fit into the asthma treatment picture?
Anticholinergics, they're like the backup singers in our asthma medication band. They work by blocking a different set of receptors in the airways called muscarinic receptors. This also leads to bronchodilation, but they're not usually the main act. They can be useful as add-on therapy, particularly in patients with COPD or those who don't respond well to other bronchodilators.
Okay, so they're like the supporting cast, ready to step in and help out when needed.
Exactly. And then we have theophylline. It's a bronchodilator that used to be more popular, but it has kind of fallen out of favor a bit.
Theophylline? That one sounds familiar. Mm-hmm. But why isn't it the go-to anymore?
Think of theophylline as a high-maintenance diva. It has a very narrow therapeutic range, meaning the dose that's effective is very close to the dose that can be toxic.
So it's like walking a tightrope, trying to find that perfect balance.
Exactly. And it requires close monitoring of blood levels to make sure the dose is just right. Plus, theophylline interacts with a ton of other medications, which makes it even trickier to manage.
I can see why it's not the first choice anymore. Speaking of monitoring, what are some signs of theophylline toxicity, you know, that nursing students should be aware of? Those are probably important to catch early on, right?
Absolutely. You want to be on the lookout for things like a racing heart rate, restlessness, trouble sleeping, nausea, and even seizures. If you see any of these red flags in a patient taking theophylline, you need to alert the healthcare provider immediately.
Got it. Safety first. Always. Okay, that was a great rundown of bronchodilators, you know, those quick relief agents. That can truly be lifesavers for people with asthma. Now let's shift gears and talk about the medications. That tackle the root of the problem, inflammation.
That's where things get really interesting. We'll explore the world of anti-inflammatory agents, those powerful medications that help to calm down those irritated and inflamed airways.
Perfect. I'm ready to dive in. Welcome back, everyone. Are you ready to tackle the next level of asthma management?
Absolutely. Let's delve into the world of anti-inflammatory medications. Those are the agents that target the underlying cause of asthma.
Perfect. We just covered bronchodilators, which give you that quick relief. Mm-hmm. But now let's talk about the meds that can really make a difference in long-term asthma management.
Exactly. When it comes to long-term control, inhaled corticosteroids are the absolute superstars, or ICS for short. They're like the foundation of any good asthma treatment plan.
Okay, ICS. Those are the ones that reduce inflammation, right? Can you break it down for us? How do they actually work their magic inside the airways?
Think of inflammation like a fire. It's raging in your patient's airways. Inhaled corticosteroids are like powerful fire extinguishers. They calm things down and prevent further damage. They work by suppressing the release of these inflammatory mediators. You know, those chemical messengers that cause all the swelling? And mucus production.
So and bronchitis. It's like peacekeepers.
Yeah.
Restoring order in those inflamed airways.
Precisely. And here's a bonus. ICS actually make those beta-2 receptors we talked about earlier more responsive. That means the bronchodilators your patients are using, they're going to work even better.
Wow. So ICS are like the ultimate multitaskers. They fight inflammation. AND boost the effectiveness of other medications. That's pretty impressive.
They really are. Now, there are several different ICS on the market, but the one that's considered the prototype, the one you'll probably encounter most often in clinical practice, is beclomethasone.
Beclomethasone, got it. Are there other ICS that I should know about?
Yes, definitely. Besides beclomethasone, which is often sold under the brand name Qvar, you have budesonide, fluticasone, mometasone, and triamcinolone. They all work in a similar way, but each one has slight differences. you know, in terms of potency, dosing, and delivery devices.
Okay, so it's a good idea to be familiar with all the different ICS options, since some might work better for certain patients than others.
Exactly. Now, like all medications, ICS can have side effects, although they're generally well-tolerated. One of the most common side effects is oral thrush, also known as candidiasis.
Oh yeah, thrush. Remember learning about that in microbiology. It's a fungal infection, right?
That's right. It's caused by an overgrowth of candida yeast in the mouth, and it can be a bit uncomfortable for patients. They might complain of white patches in their mouth, or sore throat, or difficulty swallowing.
Not fun at all. Is there anything we can do to help patients avoid this, this pesky side effect?
Absolutely. One simple but highly effective tip is to teach your patients to rinse their mouths out. With water after each ICS use, it helps to wash away any residual medication and reduces the risk of thrush developing.
That's a great tip and easy to remember. Rinsing after ICS use. I'll definitely keep that in mind, when I'm working with patients. Okay, so we've talked about bronchodilators and ICS. What other tools do we have in our asthma management toolbox?
Let's talk about leukotriene modifiers. These medications take a different approach to tackling inflammation in asthma.
Leukotriene modifiers, I remember that term. But can you remind us what leukotrienes are and how they contribute to asthma?
Leukotrienes, they're these powerful inflammatory chemicals that are released by certain cells in the body, like mast cells and eosinophils. They're like little troublemakers. They cause this whole cascade of events, leading to bronchoconstriction, increased mucus production, and airway inflammation.
So they're basically adding fuel to the fire of inflammation.
Exactly. And that's where leukotriene modifiers come in. These medications block the action of leukotrienes, so they prevent them from wreaking havoc in the airways.
So they're like bouncers at a nightclub, keeping those troublemaking leukotrienes from getting in and causing chaos.
I love that analogy. And the most well-known leukotriene modifier is Montelukast. You might know it by its brand name, Singulair.
Montelukast, that name definitely rings a bell. I remember being mentioned in the context of aspirin exacerbated respiratory disease.
You're right. Montelukast can be particularly helpful for patients with that condition. It can also be a good option for people who can't tolerate ICS or those who need additional control, on top of their ICS therapy.
Okay, so Montelukast, it's like another weapon in our arsenal against inflammation. But I have a feeling there's a but coming.
You're right. While Montelukast can be effective, there's a very important safety concern that every nursing student needs to be aware of. It carries a black box warning from the FDA due to the risk of neuropsychiatric side effects.
Whoa, a black box warning. That sounds serious. What kind of side effects are we talking about?
We're talking about changes in mood and behavior, like agitation, aggression, depression, anxiety, hallucinations, even suicidal thoughts or actions. It's a pretty serious list, and it's something we need to take very seriously.
Absolutely. So as future nurses, what should we be doing, to monitor for these potential side effects?
Yeah.
In patients taking Montelukast,
you need to be super vigilant. Be sure to ask your patients about any changes in their mood, sleep patterns, or behavior. Talk to their families, too, because they might notice subtle changes that the patient themselves might not be aware of. And if you see anything concerning, report it to the healthcare provider immediately.
Got it. Always err on the side of caution, when it comes to potential side effects.
Okay,
so we've covered bronchodilators, ICS, and leukotriene modifiers. What's next on our asthma medication adventure?
Let's talk about mast cell stabilizers, like krimolin sodium. They work a bit differently than the other medications we've discussed so far.
Mast cell stabilizers. Okay, refresh my memory. What are mast cells again, and what do they have to do with asthma?
Mast cells, they're like little alarm systems in the body. They contain granules filled with inflammatory mediators, like histamine and leukotrienes. When those mast cells are triggered by something, like an allergen or an irritant, they release those inflammatory chemicals, and it causes all sorts of trouble in the airways.
Right. So mast cell stabilizers, they basically disarm those alarm systems so they don't go off in the first place.
Exactly. They work by stabilizing the mast cells, so they prevent them from releasing those inflammatory mediators.
So they're like security guards, keeping those inflammatory chemicals locked up tight.
That's a great way to put it. Now, krimolin sodium, it's not typically used as a first-line treatment for asthma. It's often used prophylactically, meaning it's taken before exposure to a known trigger, like exercise or an allergen.
So it's like putting on a suit of armor before going into battle with those triggers.
Exactly. It helps to prevent the inflammatory response from happening in the first place. But here's the key point. Mast cell stabilizers, They're not very effective for acute asthma attacks. They don't work fast enough to provide quick relief.
Okay, so they're more like a preventative measure than a rescue medication.
Yeah.
Got it. What about those monoclonal antibodies we mentioned earlier? They sound pretty high tech.
They are. Monoclonal antibodies, or MABs for short. They're like guided missiles that target very specific parts of the immune system. And in the world of asthma, omalizumab is the big player.
Omalizumab, another name to remember. Can you break it down for us? How does it work? And who is it used for?
Omalizumab targets a type of antibody called IgE, which plays a key role in allergic reactions. By blocking IgE, omalizumab prevents that whole cascade of events that leads to inflammation and bronchospasm in allergic asthma.
So it's like cutting the wires on a bomb before it can explode.
Exactly. It intercepts those IgE antibodies and stops them from triggering the allergic reaction. It's a game changer for patients with severe allergic asthma who don't respond well to other treatments.
That's amazing. It sounds like science fiction come to life. But
Yep.
is omalizumab safe? Are there any risks or side effects associated with it?
Omalizumab is generally safe and effective, but like any medication, it does have potential side effects. One of the most serious concerns is the risk of anaphylaxis, which is a severe and potentially life-threatening allergic reaction.
Another black box warning. Wow, this is serious stuff.
It is. That's why omalizumab has to be administered in a healthcare setting. You know where the staff are trained to recognize and treat anaphylaxis if it occurs. But despite this risk, omalizumab can be a life-changing treatment for many patients with severe allergic asthma.
Okay, so it's a powerful tool, but it's important to be aware of the potential risks and to administer it in a safe environment.
Got it. Are there any other monoclonal antibodies on the horizon for asthma treatment?
There are actually several others that target different pathways of inflammation, like mebolizumab, reslizumab, benralizumab, dupilumab, and tezepelumab. They're all designed for severe asthma. That doesn't respond well to traditional treatments. It's an exciting time to be in healthcare, as we're seeing these incredible advances in the treatment of complex diseases like asthma.
It's truly remarkable. But even with all these advanced medications, we can't forget about the fundamentals of asthma management. That's where those GINA guidelines come into play, right?
Absolutely. The GINA guidelines, developed by the Global Initiative for Asthma, they provide evidence-based recommendations for the diagnosis, assessment, and management of asthma. And the 2022 update, it introduced some significant changes that every nursing student needs to be aware of.
Okay, GINA Guidelines 2022 update. Give us the highlights. What are the key takeaways, that we need to know?
One of all the biggest changes is the emphasis on inhaled corticosteroids, or ICS, as the cornerstone of daily maintenance therapy. For all persistent asthma, they're no longer considered just an add-on therapy. They're now the foundation of treatment.
So no more relying solely on bronchodilators for long-term control. ICS are stepping up to the plate.
Exactly. Another important change is the recommendation for combination therapy. For patients whose asthma isn't well controlled on ICS alone, the preferred approach is now an inhaler that combines both an ICS and a LABY. Remember that dynamic duo we talked about earlier?
Right, the ICS to fight inflammation
Yeah.
and the LABY to keep those airways open. It's like a 1-2 punch against asthma.
Precisely. And the GINA guidelines also highlighted the emergence of something called SMART, which stands for single maintenance and rescue therapy.
Smart. I like the sound of that. Tell me more.
SMART involves using a single inhaler that contains both budesonide, an ICS, and formoterol, a LABA, for both maintenance and quick relief.
So it's like a one-stop shop for asthma control.
Exactly. It simplifies treatment, potentially improves adherence, and gives patients a sense of control over their condition.
Okay, GINA guidelines. ICS is the foundation of treatment. Combination therapy when needed. And the emergence of SMART. Got it. These guidelines are really shaking things up.
They are, and they really emphasize the importance of personalized, stepwise care based on each patient's individual needs.
It's all about finding the right treatment plan for each person, like putting together a puzzle. But speaking of puzzles, let's talk about a situation that can be a real challenge for healthcare providers. Status asthmaticus. It's a term that every nursing student should understand and know how to handle.
You're right. Status asthmaticus, it's a life-threatening emergency. That requires immediate and aggressive intervention. It's basically a severe asthma attack that doesn't respond to the usual treatments.
Okay, so it's like an asthma attack on steroids.
In a way, yes. The airways become so constricted that it becomes incredibly difficult for the person to breathe. They might be gasping for air, have a rapid heart rate, and even show signs of cyanosis.
That sounds terrifying. What are the key things we need to do? When a patient presents with status asthmaticus, what's the treatment approach?
It's all about aggressive bronchodilation and reducing inflammation as quickly as possible. We're talking high-dose, short-acting beta agonists like albuterol, delivered frequently via a nebulizer, systemic corticosteroids to dampen down that inflammation, and oxygen therapy to ensure adequate oxygen levels.
It sounds like we're throwing everything we've got at it.
We are. And in some cases, patients might even need mechanical ventilation to help them breathe. It's a critical situation that requires quick thinking, decisive action, and close monitoring.
Wow, that's a lot to take in. But it's so important for us as future nurses to be prepared for these kinds of emergencies. We need to be able to recognize the signs of status asthmaticus and know how to respond effectively.
Absolutely. It's all part of providing safe and competent care to our patients. And that's why we're doing this deep dive, to equip you with the knowledge and confidence you need, you know, to excel in your nursing careers.
Welcome back to our asthma medication deep dive. We've covered a lot of ground here, from those quick-relief bronchodilators to the long-term inflammation fighters like inhaled corticosteroids.
We even explored some cutting-edge therapies like monoclonal antibodies, which are revolutionizing the treatment of severe allergic asthma.
It's amazing how far we've come, you know, in understanding and treating this complex disease. But before we wrap things up, I want to make sure we hit on the key takeaways from those GNA guidelines. They seem like a real game changer for asthma management.
Absolutely. The 2022 GNA guidelines, they're a must-know for any nursing student. They provide the most up-to-date, evidence-based recommendations for providing the best possible care to your patients. You know, the ones with asthma.
So for future nurses out there, what are the need-to-know points from these guidelines? You know what's going to help them shine in clinicals and beyond.
Okay, let's break it down into three key areas. First, inhaled corticosteroids, or ICS. They're now considered the foundation of daily maintenance therapy for all persistent asthma cases. This is a major shift from previous guidelines. It really highlights how important ICS are, you know, for controlling inflammation and preventing those exacerbations.
So no more relying solely on those short-acting beta agonists for long-term control. ICS are the real MVPs now.
Exactly. Second, for patients whose asthma isn't well controlled on ICS alone, the GNA guidelines recommend stepping up to combination therapy, usually an inhaler that combines an ICS with a LABA. Remember that power couple we talked about?
Right. The ICS to tackle inflammation and the LABA to keep those airways open. A winning combination for sure.
And the third key takeaway is the emergence of something called SMART, which stands for single maintenance and rescue therapy.
SMART, I like the sound of that.
So SMART involves using a single inhaler that contains both budesonide and ICS, and formoterol, a LABA, for both maintenance and quick relief.
So instead of carrying around two inhalers, one for daily maintenance and one for rescue, now patients can just use one. That seems like a big win for simplifying treatment and improving adherence.
Absolutely. The GNA guidelines are all about finding the right treatment plan for each individual, you know, taking into account their specific needs, preferences, and risk factors.
It's like tailoring a suit. You want it to fit perfectly.
That's a great analogy. And as future nurses, you'll play a vital role in educating your patients. You know about their medications, making sure they understand how to use their inhalers correctly, monitoring for any side effects, and advocating for their needs.
It's a big responsibility, but also incredibly rewarding to be able to help people breathe easier and live fuller lives. That's what makes nursing so special.
I couldn't agree more. It's about empowering patients to take control of their health and achieve the best possible outcomes.
So as we wrap up this asthma medication deep dive, what's the one message you want to leave our nursing student listeners with? What's the most important thing for them to remember as they embark on their nursing careers?
Never stop learning. Asthma is a complex and ever-evolving field, with new research and new therapies emerging all the time. Stay curious, ask questions, and always strive to expand your knowledge.
Wise words. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on this journey. We hope you've gained some valuable insights, you know, into the world of asthma medications, and that you feel more confident in your ability to provide excellent care to your future patients. Keep those curious minds engaged, and remember, the world of respiratory care is full of possibilities.